This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com on a Thursday afternoon at just after 1 o'clock. I'm Mavali Moloi and I've got my partner in crime,
Aspasia Karras.
Welcome to another edition of Between Two Femmes.
It's Thursday. I'm so delighted.
You know what? It's Thursday. It's August.
We had the day off on Monday, which was a delight.
Yes, women's
Jesus system.
Women's month, women's day. Although, don't women's you find it day, interesting women's how conversations?
Day. There's have, anger out there about
well,
Women's Day.
Well, isn't this an interesting thing? Because, you know, government tries to do this whole PR thing, dedicating the whole month to women. And then all of a sudden you see all sorts of conversation on social media with women saying, stop patronizing us, because yes, you have this great Women's Month campaign, but then we're still dealing with the issues of women not being paid their fair share.
I think we're going to have to touch on that next week. I think we must get that HR professor in.
In the same jobs that they do, that they work in with men.
17%. I mean,
let's not even go into crimes against women, you know, sexual abuse.
But you know what we should go into?
Yes.
The women's news.
Well, you know what, Aspasia?
I feel like we've already started. We peaked too soon.
Let's get straight into it. Okay, what do we have in the women's news today?
Well, we've just got more of the same, love. Oh. We've got Beck.
Oh.
Beck.
Yes.
And more Beck. I for one have invited my girlfriends to the Beck support group dinner tonight.
What does that entail? How are we
going to recover from the fact that Beck told us to think like men?
Okay, so then set the scene for us here again, because you know, just remind us all again what exactly happened with Beck.
Yeah. Somebody did an ill-advised post on Facebook for Women's Day.
Yes.
And
it went something along the lines of, look like a girl, act like a lady, think like a man, work like a boss.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And this caused outrage. And I mean, you know, the Twitter sphere, we've said this before and we say it again. It's people waiting around to be outraged.
Right.
But they really got very outraged, and this went global. And I was laughing. I don't know if you've ever seen Ellen DeGeneres' skit about the last time Beck did one of these, like, sort of ill-advised, like, sort of.
No, I have not seen it. Paint
it's
a picture
very
for
hysterical.
Me.
She got upset because Beck had put out a pen for her. Obviously,
oh,
it was
course.
In pretty.
Of course,
pink
of course. Yes.
And purple colors. And I have nothing against pink. I just want to say I think pink. But. It did create like a lot of scandal, people laughing. Finally, like, they could carry like sort of a pen in their lady hands, and
you know, their delicate little lady hands, which are just not as well equipped as men hands. And I think this is what I mean, one of the points that I liked that was raised about what's problematic with this campaign is people were saying, well, what's wrong with thinking like a woman? Because, you know, as part of the campaign, they say, no, think like a man. But what is wrong with thinking like a woman? And I think that is, you know, again, women go again saying, well, you see, this is exactly the problem with how men perceive us.
And I wonder, I mean, it hasn't come out, but I mean, I also saw a lot of like debates on the interwebs where people were saying, chances are the social media person who posted this was probably a woman herself and just didn't think it through at all. And I think it's because we don't think it through.
I'd just like for all of us to get to the point where people stop telling women what they should do, how they should think, what they should say, how they should present themselves. Just stop telling us what to do.
We're angry.
As if we're incapable of deciding for ourselves. You don't see anybody telling men how they should act or what they should think. Or like, let's just stop it already. Come now. It's time to move on.
But I have added the big pins to the shrine with Cecil the Lion because, you know, it took the heat off me, just say.
Well, speaking of heat.
After my campaign.
Speaking of heat, the new SAA chairperson, this is Dudu Mieni. And I think that she's recently stepped into the position after the previous chairperson was let go of because of a whole bunch of issues among those alluding to corruption, all sorts of things. And then there were some sort of allegations made against her in terms of what is the nature of the relationship that she's had with the president. Uh-huh. People alluding to the fact that, well, it might have been.
I just think it's wonderful that we have that kind of like player president. You know, I know that we were talking about our advanced player.
Right.
Like, what did we call him? The reformed player. The
refined.
The refined player.
The refined player.
The newly refined advanced player.
And
but
so,
I think that we have one who's like sort of the newly powerful, mostly refined, but fabulous president. And I just want to put that out there.
Okay, well, I don't know.
But let's see what Dudu said.
I don't know how people are going to receive what you
they
just
must
said,
just receive
but,
it well.
Oh, okay.
Let's
well,
not
you know
speak
what?
Ill of the president.
Dudu Mieni is the new SAA chairperson, and she's basically given interviews all over the place because I think as soon as she got the position, a lot of people jumped to conclusions on what were her qualifications for this position and what is the nature of her relationship with the president. Now, you know, people love to speculate, and I suppose that's just the nature of things. But now she's come out strong, and she's basically come out and said, you don't have to open your legs to get to the top. She says you don't see men sleeping their way to the top. So why do women do the same? But then
really, I thought that's what they were doing at golf. Like all that golf, they were actually just, it was a euphemism.
So I think, you know, I think that she's taken a pretty strong stand here because the assumption is, how did you get the job? How do you know the president? And she's saying, actually, I've earned my way to this position and it did not involve me having to sleep my way to the top.
Is she being paid the same as, the male counterpart?
Well, probably
that will be interesting.
Probably not. But you know, speculation is what it's all about. What else do we have?
We have a very interesting story. This lovely young woman called Kiran Gandhi just ran a marathon in the States without. Well, here's what happened. She realized she was preparing to go to the marathon.
How long
for a year, she'd been like preparing to run this marathon.
Okay.
And she realized her period would be coming on the day of the marathon.
She would
start menstruating.
Yes, because you know, you've got the whole cycle thing on
your calendar. You have that cycle thing, and she was like devastated because she'd like never run during her period before. And because she had an uncomfortable, like sort of, she had one of those horrible periods where it was just a pain to have one. And she decided to carry on and ran it free. That's the point, is that she put no tampon in and ran the whole marathon with her period just running free.
Oh.
And the idea was really that, I mean, it's caused like a bit of a, it's quite interesting. She's written, oh no, it was the London Marathon, actually.
Okay.
Sorry, guys. Oh, it was a marathon in London. It wasn't the actual. Yeah, no, it was. Anyway, what was interesting was that she ran free with the period just sort of coming through
everything. Right.
And she was wearing a red pair of pants and the period.
How do we feel about this, Aspasia?
You know, it was a very interesting thing because like my initial thought is you. But then I thought, actually, here's the thing. It's a natural process.
Yeah.
You've seen men run marathons. When they run them really fast, they pee in their pants, they just carry on, they don't like bother about. There was that infamous incident with the famous marathoner who was on a winning streak, and she just sat down on the side of the road and made a poo. So truly, I mean, it was really quite fascinating. But the thing is, it's a natural process, and I think what she did was incredibly brave to just say, this happens. It happens to women. I mean, this takes us back to the when Instagram banned the photographer from posting pictures of her period coming through. So it's just another sort of an almost activist. She used the marathon to take a stand and to also say that there are many women who just stop doing things.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, we've had this conversation recently with the lady from Always. But where they stop doing their activities, going to work, going to school, because they've got a period. And she said, well, actually, look, you can run the marathon with your period. And
you know what?
Run free. But I mean, it's quite a radical statement, but it was very beautiful. I mean, the most moving part of reading here,
yeah,
this interview that I read, which was on Cosmopolitan, com with which they did with her, was that she said, you know, she was really worried as she took the decision, fine, she's going to run free, because she didn't want to run with the tampon inside her. She didn't know what the impact would be over 42 kilometers, so because she had a friend who'd been worried that her period would come on a marathon previously and had ended up with a scar because she'd run with the tampon in her bra, and because of the chafing, I mean, you're running a lot, it's very far, you get chafing.
Right.
She still had a scar on her breast. And she said, imagine that was just from having it outside. What would it do having it inside? And so she chose to run free.
You know what? And yeah, because initially when I heard the story, I also, my initial knee-jerk reaction was, ew. But then now that you've mentioned it, and I've been listening to you speak about it, and I think, well, actually, why is it ew? You know, you've got men whipping their penises out on the side of the road every other day.
They ran a 21K this weekend. It's not an issue for them.
They think that it is completely acceptable, and it is not. Actually, it is not acceptable. So there's that. And then besides that, you know, you mentioned part of the part and parcel with these marathons, you do get people pooing in their pants, you do get people, and this happens in cycling as well, you know,
it's an extreme sport.
These are natural bodily reactions that are taking place, and if people want to get
offended,
sensitive and upset by a woman running a marathon while she's on her period, all I'm going to say is that you need to just
what was beautiful,
grow up and get over yourself.
Yes,
was
that
what
she saw her father, and he just, her father and her brother, and she was worried about how they would react. And they were just so delighted to see her at, like, I don't know, mile 9, which is like about halfway through.
Yeah.
And they didn't care. And she felt so liberated after that and emotional. Like, she just shed a little tear and carried on.
I just think we need to get to the point where, you know, whenever somebody says the word period, like, you mustn't have
You're not ashamed.
Well, first of all, as a woman, don't be ashamed of it. And then secondly, for men, like, if you're still flinching and, like, pointing fingers and making funny jokes about the period, like, grow up already. You're not a 6-year-old. Honestly, just grow up. So we're going to leave it at that with the women's news, okay?
On that bloody note.
That's it. And we're going to carry straight on Between Two Frames. Remember, if you'd like to get a hold of us, you can message us straight through to WeChat. Our official ID is Cliff Central. You can also tweet us at cliffcentral.com, or you can phone in. We'd love to hear from you. 0861-555-189. Now, joining us this afternoon is Maria Nikolowska. She is the technical expert in trafficking for the Irregular Migration Unit, and they're part of the International Organization for Migration. Maria, good afternoon, and thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me here.
Now, you will remember a couple of weeks ago, Aspasia, people were very upset at the new visa regulations about abridged or unabridged birth certificates when you're traveling with your child, blah, blah, blah. And then Malusi Gigaba and his team said, no. The reason that this is being done is because of the child trafficking problem in South Africa. But people were not prepared to hear any of that. They were like, it inconveniences me and I don't care.
Well, and I mean, to be fair, it's also inconvenienced the entire tourism industry.
Well, this is true.
Because it's very hard for people to travel to this country. I mean, when I was flying back from Paris a few weeks ago, there was a woman with her daughter who was 17 or something, and she hadn't heard that there were these regulations, these new regulations, so they were turned away at the gate they were about to hop onto the plane to fly here on holiday. They were from Holland or something.
Well, you know what?
Catching a connecting flight. It was quite interesting because you could see the actual impact, but I thought it was a fantastic idea. As did you.
Well, yes,
to hear the other side of the story.
Well, look, I understand people getting upset and, you know, getting upset about being inconvenienced. But I did wonder how many South Africans are informed about, firstly, the prevalence of human trafficking in this country and the rest of the continent, and how many of them actually care. Mm. And so, Maria, let me begin with you. First of all, you are the technical expert in trafficking. And so what exactly does that mean, you being the technical expert?
Well, first, it's a mouthful word, I would say. being a technical person or an expert within the International Organization for Migration means that you have to have the experience and knowledge and I would say many years dealing with actual victims of human trafficking in different countries in the world. Again, being involved into working out the awareness raising, like from campaigns targeting the general public. I mean, talking to through different medias, including this one. But at the same time, actually talking to the relevant people, starting from the top policymakers to, again, the ground level people, what is human trafficking? Why do we need to care about the phenomenon or the issue? And does it really concern us as South Africans, as foreign nationals living in South Africa, as the overall general public? Let me just start maybe briefly about human trafficking, and I'll try not to be as technical as possible.
Look, we love a little spot of technicality in our lives.
Yeah, so. It's getting boring, actually. And I always say, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we have very young people, colleagues in our teams, especially in the media and departments. Because we kind of tend to go into technicalities too much, but then it becomes boring and the overall public doesn't really want to hear. So when talking about human trafficking, I always want to talk from experience because, again, I don't think that I have the ability to talk very well in terms of expressing myself, but talking from experience, let's tell a story of a South African girl from Eastern Cape. And we have done a lot of studies. We actually have the fact that due to young people not knowing about the phenomenon, they usually very easily tricked or deceived for a greener pasture, a better life. It doesn't need to be in a foreign country. It can be, you know,
in South Africa,
in Johannesburg or in Cape Town or the next place that has that great opportunity that will make you, you know, travel the world and wear great clothes and drive a best car. But then the trick is then, and usually it's a person within the community, someone that you know. Someone that you trust. It's a lady, it's a man. But again, based on all the studies and the experience that we have with dealing with victims of trafficking, it's always a lady as a first-hand handler, I would say.
Wow!
That approaches
a woman lures you in.
Yes.
Is that because a woman is seen to be more trustworthy when a young person is involved?
Yes. That's exactly the reason why, and that's exactly what is happening. So and of course, this lady goes to the family, to the mother or the father, and says, okay, I will really take care of your daughter. And just, you know, please allow her to come with me and she will bring money and et cetera, et cetera. So then this lady is moved from one place to another. Let's say she comes to Johannesburg. Mm. It's the city of gold. And again, from all the experience that we have had, South Africa indeed is the promised land, not just to the other people from the continent, but you know it's the belief that you know the city is or the streets are paved with gold, and again everything happens like
aren't
really
they?
Quickly. Yes.
Hey, Max, when we go out there,
some potholes.
They are golden line.
Yes. Yeah. It depends again which rugby team you support. So what happens next is, again, the promise is you'll work in a restaurant or and then again you will earn a lot of money, let's say, I don't know, 5,000 rands a month. But then the reality is different. Once they come to Johannesburg, then let's choose Hillbrow. I heard it used to be the bohemic place, in Johannesburg, I would say in South Africa as well. And a lot of artists were creating there. And
It was a bit like Paris.
Yes.
In the south.
Yeah, apparently a place to be seen as well. And but yes, in terms of being creative, and a lot of good things came out from there. But unfortunately, the reality is quite different now. And then this lady said, is being told, okay, from now on, actually, you're not going to work in a restaurant, but you need to serve certain number of clients.
Maria, you're working with the International Organization for Migration. What exactly do you, as an organization, then do? Are you tracking these poor souls that are being moved around all over the country? Are you trying to get them back home and reunited with their families? What does your job then entail as the organization?
Yes, we do have a very comprehensive program, I would say. And we've been doing this for some 20 years worldwide. What the program entails is actually when a potential victim of human trafficking actually is being referred to us, be that from the authorities, the NGO, or if he or she managed to escape from the traffickers, then we do the interviews. There are certain criteria that are there, again, based on the legislation and etc. And then, but then it's the whole... I would say the technical side moves away, but then the human one kicks in.
Because how do you escape? I mean, okay, say they've taken, obviously, properly taken your identification.
Yeah.
You don't have
no freedom of movement.
An ID. Yep. You don't have money.
Nope.
You're in a foreign city.
Yep.
You're in this impossible situation. How many people are we talking about?
Ooh, the number... our numbers are always tricky for many reasons. First is what you said. It's this phenomenon or the crime. It's very hidden in its nature. So and secondly, only on this Sunday, 9th of August, South Africa got a comprehensive legislation on human trafficking. So when you don't have the basis, the legal grounds, it's like nobody is collecting information or statistics about trafficking cases. So I can tell you, as an organization, we have assisted more than 300 victims in the past few years. But then, again...
How do they find you? Because I suppose that's the question. So these are people who got out of the system. How did they find you?
Usually it's, yes, if they manage to escape or run away from the situation where they are, be that from a brothel or a bar or a farm or a mine, or again, through a police raid, then they're being referred to us. Just want to also mention the importance of the NGOs or the civil society organizations when it comes to victims of human trafficking, in terms of sheltering these victims, providing the psychosocial assistance, and again, in order to reach the point where the victim of trafficking is empowered after the horrific experience that they've been through. And then to be able to stand up on her or his feet after the experience. It's a very long process. And some of them, they don't really succeed in that.
Maria, at the risk of sounding callous, how profitable is the trafficking of humans for the perpetrators doing it? Because you think drug trafficking, these people make a lot of money. You think, you know, moving arms, firearms all over the place, that's also cigarettes. Very profitable.
Moving cigarettes, exactly. Illegal cigarettes.
And so I wonder where human trafficking fits in on that scale, because I'm assuming these people are doing it because it is a very profitable business for them. These are now the perpetrators actually ripping people out of their homes and taking them into worlds that where they know absolutely no one.
Actually, it's all about the profit.
Yeah.
Victims are commodities that are bringing a lot of money to the perpetrators, to the traffickers. I don't know, organization, I think it was UNODC, it's the United Nations Organization for Drug and Crimes. They did a study some years ago, and the result of the study was that human trafficking is actually the third most profitable business, and it comes after the trafficking of arms and trafficking of drugs.
Oh, so it's like a modern form of slavery, essentially.
It is.
This
it
is slavery.
It is slavery. What is easy, if I can say, when it comes to human trafficking, is like there is no investment when it comes to victims of, I mean, to the people, right? Mm. They're grown-up people. You have a beautiful young lady that looks gorgeous, and then somebody lured her to enforce her to be a prostitute to bring him or her a profit, right? She doesn't get anything from that. And then it's a vicious circle, because the moment the victims think that they will be paid for the services they are being provided, it's usually the time when the owners or the traffickers actually are moving them to the next place, where then the next owner or the trafficker then says, okay, your debt has just increased for, let's say, 10,000 more rents, and now you owe me another 80,000, and you have, let's say, 5 months to earn back this money, and then we can start talking of me paying you for the services that you are actually forced to do.
I mean, you were saying before about mines, and so what happens there?
See, I guess it's because of the nature of sex trafficking, or the trafficking for the purpose of sexual exploitation. Mm. It's very, I mean, everybody wants to talk about it. It is a huge problem, but very little attention is given to labor trafficking. Mm. Being that in the farms or mines, but also in the fishing industry. I mean, we have dealt in maybe at about a year ago with some 76 fishermen from Indonesia that were just on the sea for some 3 years, and then they were just dropped off at Cape Town Harbor without any payment. They were just told find their way to go back home. The same is happening with the mines. When it comes to regulations in terms of And South Africa is very good in that when it comes to policy. Implementation might be a bit challenging from time to time.
Is that not our problem universally? Well, we've got great policies. I mean, especially with, I mean, in Women's Month, we've got fantastic gender-related policies. I think we're one of the most advanced nations in the world. And yet, we sit with such, you know, intractable problems.
Yeah.
But...
So, yes, but there are illegal mines, for example, where, and again, we have dealt with many cases of children doing the illegal mining.
Here in South Africa?
Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And again, many examples
Charles
of...
Dickens, like sort of...
Yeah, like...
Taking us back to hard times.
Or just this idea of children being... subjected to horrific working conditions in horrible sweatshops all over the world. And so, Maria, is there a group of people who are more vulnerable for human trafficking, or does it depend on the industry? So, for example, with sex trafficking, it will mostly be women. With labor, it will mostly be men. And then you've
and
got children. Is there one group of people that are more vulnerable to be trafficked?
I will really sound boring now. I'm not going to refer to specific studies or something. We have done a lot of work and you know, looking into the trends and why and who is the most vulnerable and why actually this is happening. But unfortunately, there is no, should I use the word recipe or
so it's not
formula.
Just poverty.
Formula.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not formula.
Yeah.
Is it poverty?
It is poverty.
Yeah.
It's, I would say, also the globalization.
Yeah.
Also, since it's a Women's Month, what is happening now, while in the past is like it was only the men that were migrating, were taking jobs abroad. But nowadays, things are changing. It's also women that are, you know, also taking jobs abroad. And I'm the example of that one as well. So this is also the reason, but I would also say lack of information. It's the belief that this is not going to happen to me. In some of the instances, it's again low level of education, but not necessarily. I can tell you again thousands of examples of, let's say, highly educated women from Eastern Europe with, I don't know, doctor degrees and everything, that ended up, not all of them, but some of them, as victims of trafficking.
I see that the Amnesty International has just said, and this is very controversial, has said that they believe that prostitution should be legalized in the world. And of course, this has like caused a lot of drama because people are saying, you know, this is the great untold, unspoken, you know, side of slavery and human trafficking, and that many people who are prostitutes are not in this business because they want to be, but because they've been trafficked. Can you give us a little insight on that, Maria?
Okay. As you said, it's a very controversial topic, and of course there are different opinions, pro and against. And I'm not trying to avoid the answer because, as I've mentioned earlier,
she's very diplomatic. I'm sorry.
It's not within our mandate, and but I would say it's like again, it's a topic for a discussion, and we can talk about that for years. The point is that again, at least according to me, is you know, there will be probably a great legislation for legalizing the prostitution again, that will also reduce the human trafficking. Mm. But what about the implementation of it? And again, that still may lead to actually prostitutes not really being there or doing the job that they're doing on a voluntary basis, as, you know, it's believed, but actually they've been trafficked.
Maria, when the Minister of Home Affairs says that they've implemented these new laws because they are concerned with child trafficking, and then when the average South African turns around and says, ah, screw you, how many children are possibly being trafficked that it needs to inconvenience me? Is that us just being completely ignorant of how bad
The situation is
in human trafficking, and then specifically in child trafficking, and then also, what do we do about it?
As I've mentioned earlier, unfortunately, we don't have the numbers, yeah. And I think the one thing that doesn't go in favor in justifying the numbers that were actually given by Department for Home Affairs when the new regulations were introduced was 30,000, I believe. Again, there are a lot of speculations, and again, it doesn't go well with the regulations or the idea for that. I think that the regulations are actually an excellent idea because, and I would say child trafficking is a huge problem. Let me tell you another example. Just think about, you have Oor Tambo International Airport in Johannesburg. I believe is one of the biggest airports in South Africa, and it has about 14 million travelers yearly. Mm-hmm. Again, because of the nature of our work.
It's my bus stop. It's
your second home.
Oh, Lord. It's bad when the people at the coffee shop recognize you and they know your order.
They just bring you the
Then you're in big trouble. You've been at Oor Tambo way too much. But moving on.
So, yeah, if I would say the ordinary person can just spend maybe a few hours, not as just a traveler, but as an official there, and just to see how many smugglers and human traffickers are there actually trying to move children in illegal way through the airport. It's just an example.
Really? So what would happen? Because now I'm panicking.
Okay.
I just sent my daughter
You're a mother,
overseas.
You know? Yeah.
You have this idea that, like, once they're through passport control, it's safe.
Please don't push the panic button. It doesn't happen to everyone. Again, let me tell you an example. a Zimbabwean national who is in UK, let's say asylum seeker or irregular migrant, pays a smuggler certain amount of money to bring two daughters to London. What is happening, the kids are moved to South Africa illegally because first it's very expensive to get a passport. Again, with the new regulations, it's impossible for kids to travel without an unregistered certificate and the consent of the two parents. And then, yeah, there's a lot of corruption where actually the kids are being put on the plane and as soon as they get to UK, for example, they claim asylum. Things can go very wrong and these children may disappear. Never actually, yeah, end up in the destination where they're supposed to be going. So, yeah.
Are there any telltale signs, so to speak, to spot when maybe somebody is being trafficked and you suspect, hang on, this is a little bit dodgy behavior?
Panic.
And if there are these signs, what are they? Because I imagine if, you know, if little old me knew what the signs were and then I spotted them, I could manage to alert somebody and say, listen, I think that this is a very suspicious situation.
I can see you tackling them to the ground.
I think this is a suspicious situation. Are there any signs to tell when somebody is in distress?
First, let's not go into tackling or trying to
anything. No tackling. No, I don't have a hero complex.
I always say violence is not an answer.
I have a Wonder Woman suit underneath this little kimono.
So, yes, signs. I think actually during the introduction you've mentioned that first is not having a freedom of movement. Someone that has been, threatened doesn't have their documents with them, if we're talking about foreign victims of trafficking. Don't really speak the language, that are always accompanied by someone.
A big, burly someone, I presume.
Yeah.
With the gun.
Or maybe even a woman, because you mentioned that the women are often used to disarm this person and to earn their trust. And then maybe when you see a woman transporting this person, it's not as suspicious.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that she's not involved
up
in
to trouble. Right.
Yeah,
you see, and I say rather have strict rules.
I agree with you.
But do you think that people, here's my question, do you think that there are many foreigners trying to traffic people into South Africa from, say, now the Dutch mother who was being turned away? Is that a pattern? I thought everyone's going that way, trying to get into Europe, pitching their tent in Calais and on the island of Samos where my parents live.
Okay. What is happening actually is South Africa is the destination country for trafficking.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
But at the same time, there is the internal trafficking where South African is recruited and exploited from one province to another.
Yeah.
But also you have South Africans that have been trafficked to other country. It's like, we had cases in Israel, I believe, even in Tajikistan.
What?
Yeah.
Mm. They trafficked them to Tajikistan?
Mm-hmm, it's for the purpose of labor exploitation. Labor,
yeah,
usually
really?
It's the advert of, to work as a helper in someone's house.
Oh, a domestic worker, and then you end up
being trafficked, actually. When it comes to, especially women, for domestic, exploitation, it goes into labor one. It's usually the dual exploitation. I mean, there is also an element of sexual exploitation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, on that sobering thought, Maria, we're going to have to leave it at that. And we thank you very much for joining us this afternoon and for enlightening us and educating us. And I think we need
Tajikistan.
To be.
Can you imagine ending up in Tajikistan?
I don't even.
There you were. You thought you were just. I mean, where is Tajikistan? Like, let's not even betray our geographical incompetence.
Well, this is the thing.
But good grief.
And I think that we need to be shocked, Aspasia, because, you know, ever so often, we just like to turn a blind eye to these things and say, well, if it doesn't affect me directly, then it's not really my problem.
Sigh. So, it's really terrible. I think we should move on to, like, cheerier things. All right. Babies, adoption. apparently, that's also flower an shop. Issue.
Well, yes. Yeah. But if you would like to get information, you can log on to southafrica.iom.int. That's our International Organization for Migration. Maria Nikolovska, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Maria? Yeah, where are you from?
Ooh. You international traveler. Don't say Tajikistan.
No, I'm not from Tajikistan.
You're silly.
Okay, I'm from Macedonia.
Oh.
And we'll talk later where it is. Actually, it's just north from Greece.
I know exactly where Macedonia is.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Maria.
Well, very nice to meet you.
Yes, Maria is the technical expert in trafficking for the Irregular Migration Unit of the International Organization for Migration. Maria, thank you for enlightening us this afternoon on cliffcentral.com.
This is cliffcentral.com.
It's cliffcentral.com with myself, Mabali Moloi, and Aspasia Karas with another edition of Between Two Femmes.
Mabali, I've just Googled Tajikistan. Do you know where it is? It's on top of Afghanistan.
Well, okay.
And underneath
Kyrgyzstan. Right.
Next to China. That is just somewhere very, very, very far. Imagine being trafficked there. My mind boggles.
Well, you know what? This is the reality of the very harsh world that we live in. And
Dushanbe. Imagine waking up in Dushanbe.
I'm not going to imagine it because it is a very upsetting and unnerving prospect and thought. And especially if you ended up there because, you know, some idiot decided to snatch you away from your environment and just to use you in some sort of way. But, let's move along because we've got Nomvuyo Shabangu joining us on the line now, and she's from the Joburg Child Welfare. Is it Nomvuyo or Nomvula? My mistake.
Nomvuyo.
Good afternoon, and thank you for speaking with us this afternoon on Between Two Femmes. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Only a pleasure.
Hello, Nomvuyo.
Hi, how are you?
We are shocked. We're sitting here in a state of shock, just thinking about being trafficked to Tajikistan, of all places, which is something that happens. So we thought we'd speak to you about little babies. It's just
all right.
Much nicer.
Well,
yeah, babies are nicer.
Yeah, Nomvuyo, let's begin with the work that you and your organization do with Joburg Child Welfare. I mean, what kind of services do you then offer? Just tell us about the work that you do at Joburg Child Welfare.
Okay, good afternoon to the listeners. Joburg Child Welfare is a child protection organization that works with children that have been abused, abandoned, or neglected, or some of them are orphaned. And these children range from 0 to 12 years old at intake.
Hmm.
So what we do, for instance, you would find that a concerned citizen would phone us to say there's a child that's being abused somewhere, and then we would go and do a risk assessment. And then in that risk assessment, we find that maybe the child really is abused or is neglected. Then we would remove the child to a place of safety, be it with a private place of safety or what people know as children's homes. We call them child and youth care centers now. And then we go to court. We go to court and report that we've got a child. These are the circumstances. We just need time to investigate the circumstances. Circumstances being investigated might mean that maybe the child wasn't really abused by a parent, but maybe somebody else. We look for various things. So it could be that children return home, or it could be that we look for alternative care, which would be in foster care or in adoption. So we have those services that are at the beginning. And then we've got foster care services, which then follows on now in terms of where children cannot be returned home right now. The court gives parents an opportunity to improve on their services. And then those children are placed in foster care. So we offer supervision, foster care supervision. We also offer reunification services. Because whilst the children are away from parents, parents have got work to do to try and improve their circumstances. There are circumstances where there is no one for a child. For instance, if you're looking at an abandoned baby. An abandoned baby, we will try and trace family through publications. But if nobody comes forward, then that child is deemed to have no one.
Nomvuyo, how big is the problem of like that you're dealing with? How many children are you actually dealing with?
With Job and Child Welfare, in total, you look at, we impact. When I say impact, it's not necessarily a direct dealing to about 47,000 children.
Yeah.
But our child and family unit, which receives children, at least about 15 children come in a day. They don't all necessarily get removed from children, but concerns about children. I'm talking about the walk-ins, not your telephone calls.
Yeah.
Or your emails, but the people that walk in, you're looking at least for about 15 a day.
How are you coping with such numbers?
You know what? We've got various departments that do various things. And that's why I'm saying we do risk assessment, because somebody may say, oh, it's a problem, and yet it's not. And some of the 15 that come in, they come in, but they're not necessarily falling within our threshold or our remit in terms of an area or in terms of service or in terms of what the problem is. But we do rely a lot on the communities, because we get a lot of volunteers. Part of the services, if I may just interject there, that we offer is residential care. We've got two residential facilities and one daycare center. So the residential facilities, if they act both as a place of safety or a place where children can stay long term. So, and in those centers, the one center which is in Soweto caters for 90 children from birth to about 18/21 if they are still at school. And the one in Westcliff caters for 30 babies, 0 to 2 years. And then our daycare center at Masibambisane caters for 220 children at any given time. So at these centers, we rely a lot. We do employ people to work, but we get a whole lot of help from volunteers as well.
And what do you have to, because now we've heard about all these tragic tales of human trafficking and what have you, what do you have to do to vet? Surely you must be vetting these volunteers.
We do.
Yeah. Good. Please vet them, because we're very worried.
No, we do. One of the things that we do is to check people against the Child Protection Register,
okay,
which was introduced. It came in with the new Children's Act that came in 2010,
uh-huh,
but I think it's to sort of come into real action now. It came in last year. So anybody and everybody that has anything to do with children or wants to have anything to do with children, they get a police check done or FSB checked against the Child Protection Register.
Nomvuyo, I would imagine that encouraging South Africans to adopt is something that you as an organization perhaps pay particular attention to. You know, even though you will hear the experiences that people go through when trying to adopt, and they'll often say that, you know, it's
hard,
it's strenuous, it's difficult, there's a lot of red tape, there's a lot of, you know, there are a lot of steps and procedures to go through. Now we understand that all of that is necessary, but maybe you can just talk us through that whole process of adoption, because it's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
I think, number one, just to state that people would say it's too much red tape because they want a child now, and they know that the child is already born. So they can't see a reason why they have to go through all of this. And they know themselves, but we don't know them. And we have to do all that we can to protect the children that are in our care. So, but part of the things that people do with the orientation, for instance, if a person approaches us and they say they're interested in adopting a child, we would put them through an orientation program first. It's a meeting where everybody that is interested in adopting meets with the social workers and some of the people that have already adopted, and they hear all the truth about adoption. Because, again, people might have their preconceived ideas about what is it, what can they expect. So in that meeting, they get explained to the process, number one, and the things that they have to do, as well as some of the things that they can expect. And the things to expect come from the experiences of the previous, of the people that have already adopted before. So that a person, when they make a decision, okay, fine, I want to go ahead with this adoption, they've got the worst case scenario, put it like that. And they can deal with the worst case scenario. It's not always like that. Theirs might be mild and smooth, but if they can accept the worst case scenario, then they're in. But then one of the things then that they would follow from that, because after hearing those truths, we encourage people to adopt, but we don't follow up on them because we don't want people to feel pressure that they have to adopt. It's a decision that they have to make, and it's something that they have to be motivated to do.
Nomvuyo, where can people go to if they would like to do a bit more research into child adoption and then also just to get more information on what we've been talking about this afternoon?
There's Adoption Coalition website, and they can also go through to our website, which is Johannesburg Child Welfare.
Can I just say, Nomvuyo, that three of my friends have adopted in the last year.
Mm.
And the joy of it, I cannot actually explain. Those little babies. They are super cute.
They're fantastic. But
the joy it brought to them. So yes. I know there must be negative things, but the delight in these people's hearts is just a completely different thing.
Yes. But also I think for people, Mabale, if they want to just see it in action, what we normally do twice a year, we have events that involve the adoptive parents with their babies. So, for instance, at the beginning of the year, it's normally around May, we would have an open day where people with their babies come and meet the social worker. So it's an opportunity to see how beautiful this whole thing is. And at December time, we have a Christmas party. Everybody comes with their babies and show off their babies.
I need to be invited.
Yes.
Because I think it's a joyful, fantastic thing. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Nomvuyo. We had to cut you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nomvuyo, and we thank you for all the good work that you and Joburg Child Welfare do. That's Nomvuyo Shabangu with Johannesburg Child Welfare.
I must say I'm humbled.
Well, there you go.
By all these people.
Listen, we've completely run out of time, but thank you for joining us. And then we'll be back with you next week, Thursday, for another edition of Between Two Femmes. Thank you, Asfasia.
Thank you, Mabali.
This is CliffCentral.com.